Welcome to our podcast for Raising Arizona Kids Magazine. I'm Vicki Belint. Sister Joan Fitzgerald arrived in Phoenix in 1962, ready for the assignment from her order, the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, or BVMs. She was assigned to be a Spanish teacher at what was then Xavier High School. And she stayed. 50 years later, now principal of Xavier College Preparatory, Sister Joan talks about change, opportunity, and the satisfaction of a life well lived.
I think the first thing historically I remember is, remember the white smoke over the Vatican? I was 4 years old. We were sitting in our living room listening to the radio, waiting for the announcement of the new pope. And my mother was crocheting a tablecloth, which I think my niece still uses. But I think at 4 years old, that was something that was very significant in our family and really made an impression on me. And then a couple years later, my brother, who was 7 years older, and my sister, 4 years older, and I went to a movie on Sunday afternoon. And we came out of the movie and we were waiting in the lobby for my dad. And I knew there was something very wrong. People were very upset. There wasn't a lot of noise or anything. But when we got home, we were told that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor and World War II had started. We were in it. And that really made an impact on me. I'm sure I didn't know the significance of war, but I knew that people were upset. And then a couple years later, Mamie Eisenhower grew up in our little town, and her husband came to visit. He was General Eisenhower at the time, later President Eisenhower, came to the school, and we got to ride with him in his Jeep around the parking lot, because that was during the World War II.
And what was the name of the town?
Boone, Iowa.
Mamie
was from Boone, lived a few blocks from us. Then the next thing I remember was, it was a spring afternoon, and we were outside playing, and again it was the radio, and President Roosevelt had died. And then a couple years later, it was the end of the war. And that was very special. Everybody was very happy. And you know, from 1945 until 1962, I can't remember anything historically happening that made any impact on me. And I think, you know, as I was thinking of that, I thought, those are probably the years where you're so centered on yourself that you don't realize that there are other important things that are happening.
And that sort of brings us to high school. Talk a little bit about how your high school experience, maybe what you do remember, compares with here at Xavier.
It was very structured. We had the BVMs. I had them for 12 years.
That's the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Mary is the community I'm with. Mm-hmm. We studied world history and biology and chemistry and algebra 2 and basically all of those core curriculum you had. We didn't have any of the fancy things. Everybody took 4 years of Latin because we had one teacher and she taught the Latin. But it was a very, very good school. And when I think of it now, many of the sisters who taught me went on to be the professors at two of our colleges. So that we really had the advantage of very, very good teachers.
Contrast, if you would, what's changed most about high school since you were in high school and what you see today here at Xavier.
Well, I think all the advantages that the students have now. I mean, culturally, you know, the exposure they have globally, you know, technology has completely changed their life, and we'll never go back to being the simple little educational system we were now.
So, was there a particular mentor from your youth that influenced you?
I think, yes, there was one sister who was the Latin teacher, who taught us all 4 years, and she was also a music teacher. So she really had an impact as far as teaching us the music and keeping us a little bit as scholars studying Latin.
What sort of things do you remember doing in high school socially?
Same thing. Oh, Notre Dame football was number one in our life. We would go to South Bend, or we would go to Chicago and watch the games. The high school football games were important. We had dances every week. We didn't just have a few during the year. You know, basically it was pretty much the same.
So let's talk a little bit about how you arrived at the decision to enter the order, enter sisterhood. How did that unfold for you?
I guess it was just the influence of the sisters throughout my whole education. And then when I graduated, I went to Clark College in Dubuque, which was our college. And then it was time to start thinking, you know, what was college supposed to be about? And that's when I decided to become a sister.
Talk about the thought that went into that.
Well, you know, I think being a teacher was the most, being a sister was more important, because at that time, our community, we're all teachers. There really wasn't an option. You know, now there are many, many options, and the sisters are involved in all kinds of things. So I never basically gave education a second thought. I was just going to be a teacher because they all were teachers.
So there, that's intertwined for you, being a teacher and being a sister.
Right.
So what's the mission of the order, the Blessed Virgin Mary? What is it, an education order?
Yes, but to go anywhere in the world where you can do the work of the gospel. So lots of our teachers, our sisters now are in Africa, they're in Latin America, some are still in Phoenix and Chicago.
Did you ever think about going somewhere else?
You know, I don't think I did. I was assigned to California first for 3 years, which was, Santa Barbara was beautiful. And then I was assigned here, and everything just seemed to evolve since there.
If you could talk just a little bit about that process of becoming a sister, because I think a lot of people don't really understand it. They don't know what happens.
Well, you go to a central place. It's like a college. There were 150 in my group. We went to school all day long. We had, you know, household duties that everybody would have trying to keep an institution like that going. You certainly had a prayer life. And you really built a community of sisterhood. We talk about the sisterhood here. I entered with 150. I think there are 18 of us left. But of that 150, we are still great friends. And we love to get together. And there's a friendship and a bond that's really built up over those years.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got to Xavier.
I was assigned here. Well, all I can remember is we left Chicago after graduation. We graduated on Friday afternoon, and Saturday there were four of us put on a train. We were coming to California, and one of the sisters lived here. So I got off the train at midnight with her to spend the weekend with her and her family, and we were at Xavier, and it was 110. I remember we got off the train, it was midnight. We got to the convent, went to bed. I woke up in the middle of the night and the air conditioning had gone off. And I had this pink wool blanket all over me. And I woke up and I thought, oh, please God, never send me here. Well, that was a prayer that was never answered.
And what year would that have been?
That was 1959.
So you must have woken up and it was completely different.
Completely different.
Than where you came from.
That's right. Off of the breezes of Lake Michigan in Chicago to the 110 degree heat at midnight in Phoenix was quite a change.
How'd you get used to it?
I guess you just get used to it.
And so you began teaching?
Yes.
And what was your first class?
My first class in it was Spanish. I taught Spanish for 3 years in Santa Barbara, and I taught Spanish for 4 years here. Then I became the treasurer, and then I became the vice principal and the principal.
So it was like a climbing up the ladder.
I think it was kind of whatever had to be done. You know, they just kind of kept asking you to do different things.
So when you started teaching, did you aspire to be where you are now?
Absolutely not. You wouldn't even think of it. It was just, you know, as people came and left and there were openings, you got assigned to that opening. When I became treasurer, that was my extracurricular activity. Somebody else was coaching volleyball and somebody else was putting on the drama club and I was the treasurer.
So it just sort of happened.
It just happens. I think that in religious life, lots of stuff just happens.
But it's a leadership role. You, what was thrown at you, what appeared for you, and you stepped up.
That's right. I think so.
It's fascinating because many people start a career such as yours and they have their eye on the end. But not for you.
No, I don't think so.
So what are some of the changes that you've seen over the years since you began in women's education in particular?
Oh, I think it's been wonderful things have happened in women's education. You know, the talents have always been there, but the opportunities to realize those talents weren't there. And that's what's so wonderful to see over the years. And even when I came here in 62, that was very evident. The girls had many more opportunities than they would have had in a co-ed school, I think, and the opportunities to go on to college and higher education.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. They had more opportunities than in a co-ed school, you say. Leadership. Why is that?
Leadership opportunities. There weren't any boys to compete with. So the editors of the papers, the captains of the sports teams, the officers of the clubs. They were all women. They were all girls.
And some people would say, I guess, that it's these days, it's good to be among men because that's reality. But maybe you feel a little bit differently.
Well, I think here at Xavier and Brophy, the relationship is kind of the best of both worlds because they're independent schools. The boys certainly fulfill their leadership roles, the girls do, but they still have that interaction academically and socially, which is good.
Talk a little bit about the classes that were offered, say, in 1962 versus today, and the interest that girls have and what they're aspiring to, because that's changed.
I think probably the highest math was algebra 2 trig, the highest science was chemistry. All of them took Latin, and then finally we added Spanish and French. I think it was just the basic curriculum. American government was probably one of the electives that you had in social studies. And when you think now, the expanse of the curriculum that we have.
Because back in 1962, there weren't that many girls that were thinking of engineering, medical school, even being lawyers. And now that's completely changed.
That's right. When I think now, the way the girls select their classes and really it's tailored to them, the first day they came to school, they were handed a schedule, and this was their schedule. Wasn't that true? They were handed a schedule, and if we ran a short day and if the classes were overloaded, we came home and the nuns redid their schedule, so they came back the next day and got another schedule, and maybe 3 or 4 days later, the schedule was in place. Well, we'd have chaos today if we didn't have the girls in their classes the first day that they wanted to be in.
But the girls back then versus the girls today, you must look at that and think, wow, we've got girls here who want to study calculus B and are being engineers and are being doctors. How do you feel about that?
I think it's wonderful. That's the way it should be.
It doesn't surprise you or does it surprise
not.
You?
Yeah. No, because I think even, you know, in the 60s, the Xavier girls were ahead of, you know, their counterparts in their opportunities to go to college and to really go into professions.
So let's talk a little bit then. You were saying about how the advantages of girls, the advantages that girls have with the same gender education. What have you seen or heard from alumni that come back and talk to you about their experience at Xavier and how it has changed them as women?
I think when they get on the college campus, they realize the opportunities they have. And they come back and, you know, they don't think that there's something out there that they can't do. Where other girls getting on a college campus, sometimes they're still taking those secondary positions until they really make their space. And our girls leave and the world's open to them. Like we had Dr. Mark Jacobs, who runs the Honors College. Well, he came and spoke at the ex-breakfast. And he read, the kids have to do an exit, either a long paper or project. He read the names of those projects that the kids are doing. And I think most of our adults sitting there with their mouths open, they didn't even understand what the title of the project was. And these are girls that have been out of school 3 or 4 years. They are in a world that none of us really could even comprehend. I don't think even 10 years ago.
It's changed that much with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you're pretty optimistic about the future for young women.
Oh, absolutely. And I think even statistically out there, I think the tide has turned and there are more women being educated in colleges and universities than men. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but I'm saying they've reached their potential anyway.
Do you ever look back at when you were making the decision to enter sisterhood, be a teacher, do you ever look back and think, if this had just been now, maybe I would have been something else?
No, probably not.
Because at the time, there weren't as many options for you.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think it's been a very happy and satisfying life. And I certainly have been given a lot more opportunities than many women my age ever received because we were given the education.
Do you credit sisterhood?
Sure. I think as you look back over the last, in the 60s and the 70s, the women who were college presidents were nuns. The women who were running hospitals were nuns. The women who were running schools were nuns. And it just happened to be the opportunities that we were given, which was wonderful.
So vocations among women are declining. Will nuns be around in 50 years?
Who knows? If God wants them here, we'll be here. I think, you know, it's just, it's how society changes. And there was a need for us for education and in the health fields. But we have also educated our people. And if we've educated them right, they can take over. So if we're not here, it shouldn't make any difference. We would have failed if we hadn't educated people to do those things.
So after the 50 years that you've been a nun, that you've been a sister, what are you most proud of?
I think just being able to work with the people I've worked with. It's been very fulfilling and wonderful. And I've been able to use my talents, but I've also been able to watch everybody else use their talents.
Our April issue is full of summer solutions for parents, including a listing of day camps in Maricopa County. Also, read about why there's a brighter future ahead for teens and adults on the autism spectrum. More at RaisingArizonaKids.com. I'm Vicki Balint. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was produced by Small Change Media for RaisingArizonaKids.com. All rights reserved. This material cannot be reproduced or rebroadcast without permission.